Okay, guys, we got to be honest here. You all know by now that Rent Ready is an awesome property management software that Corey and I used to elevate our business on multiple levels between being landlords and managing our tenants. But this isn't just an old podcast ad about how you can manage all your units, maintenance, screening, leases, tenants, and using Rent Ready's mobile app. This podcast ad is a secret. That's because this month, Rent Ready is releasing a game-changing feature that will save you a whole lot of time and headache when it comes to crunching numbers on your rentals. While we can't share it just yet, make sure you stay tuned to our show, The Weekly Juice, for the surprise reveal. Because we have it on good authority that Rent Ready will be letting our listeners know once this top secret feature is ready to go. In the meantime, if you're looking to get started using Rent Ready's powerhouse of the platform and get signed up, saving 50% off any Rent Ready plan, you'll just have to use the code JUICEPOD. That's JUICEPOD on their website. That's 50% off any Rent Ready plan when you sign up using our code JUICEPOD at rentready.com. Go to rentredi.com and use code JUICEPOD, JUICEPOD, for 50% off any Rent Ready plan. If this is your first time here, welcome. During our shows, we interview successful entrepreneurs and investors to spread knowledge, advice, and actionable tactics to help others in the pursuit of financial freedom. We discuss successes, failures, systems, motivations, experiences, and key lessons learned along the way in the hopes that these stories help you along your journey. Tune in every Wednesday to get your weekly juice. If you've been here before and like what you've been hearing, please subscribe, share with friends, rate, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That goes an extremely long way for us. It's simple. Just click on your podcast app, type in our podcast name, The Weekly Juice, click on the reviews, and let us know what you think. The more ratings we get, the more eyes we'll get on our show, and in turn, we'll be able to provide you all with high-quality guests. You can also find us on Instagram, at Weekly Juice Pod, for daily content and personal finance tips to assist in your journey towards financial freedom. Welcome back to The Weekly Juice. As always, it's your boys, Ryan and Corey, here with another episode for you. Today, we had on arguably my favorite episode. There was so much energy throughout the entire thing. And we talked about finance and investing in an exciting and fun manner. And it just kind of had a little comic relief in there too. So if this is more of a laid back, like sit back and listen episode. If you're driving, it's probably going to be an amazing one for you, but we had on special guest Georgie, AKA Financialism. So you can find him on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. He's pretty much everywhere in the finance community right now. And just the way he carries himself, he's very, very smart, but also brings a little comic relief and fun and energy into the financial sphere. And it makes the conversation in like not so daunting talking about investing.
Yeah. Talk about somebody who is just super unique, like in general, just the way he thinks. All his answers were very different from the normal answers that we get. And if you want to know philosophical things about personal finance and financial independence, you're going to find it here. If you want to know tangible, what stocks does he specifically invest in? You're going to find that here. What does he tells you exactly about his salary, that he made $33,000 and he was still investing while he made $33,000. He tells you his net worth is 300 grand. He's like probably a couple years away from 30. He's growing it consistently. He just talks about every aspect of his life like an open book. And I think it's super relatable for people to understand that there are people out there that really just want to share information with others. This episode was, in my opinion, phenomenal. Just the way that he went through his entire story, and he'll give you the nuggets.
Any question we had, he had an answer for, and it wasn't because he was super prepared. It was just because he genuinely has knowledge on the subject and has done hours and hours of research. He's just a book of wealth and honestly a very fun and hilarious guy in general.
Georgie, let's bring him in.
Let's bring him in. The man, the myth, the legend, Financialism, officially welcome to the Weekly Juice Podcast. Corey and I are thrilled to have you here. We've been following your journey for a while on social now. Love all that you're doing. I know you got the finance wraps. You help people along their journey to financial freedom. You talk a lot about index funds and just getting your financial house in order. So we figured we'd bring a powerhouse on today, and we're thrilled to have you, man.
Yo, it is so good to be here. I'm super excited. I've been following you guys for a minute too. And I think when we collaborate, when we make these things happen, like this is how I learned about investing, right? Just listening to people talk about money. And I was like, whoa, you don't got to know anyone who has money to hear people talk about money through the internet. Let's go.
It's awesome. Let's go, exactly. It's awesome, dude.
It's our kind of guy.
I like I said, we've seen a lot of your videos and that you do all these awesome little quick clips, but they're, it's almost like a comic undertone to finance and makes it easier to talk about. And I think, you also have the raps, and I was going to lead in the show with one of your raps, but for whatever reason, it's not loading, but you have two that are awesome and I love them. And I was listening to them like, damn, this is actually like a good song. It's not just quirky and like about finance and I wouldn't like it. Like I was actually bumping it in the car, dude, on the way here. So I appreciate it. It's To the Moon and then Lazy Boy.
That's right. Lazy Boy, To the Moon. Those are like the two frameworks for my investing. I want all my stocks to go to the moon and I want to be a lazy boy about it.
I love it, dude. It's awesome. We'll link in the show notes. I'll make sure we click your link in bio so everybody can go follow the tunes and your page. But without further ado, I do kind of want to dive in your story and let you know, because we know a little bit about you, but I think maybe our listeners would like to peel back some layers here. So can you give us a little background on who you are, where you're from, and then how you got into the financial independence movement, this FIRE movement, and what kind of like brought that to life for you?
For sure. I think traditionally people think of growing wealth and investing, whether it's real estate or stocks or Pokemon cards, whatever you're into, as an individual thing. And to me, it's much more than an individualistic journey. It's a journey for your whole family, not just for your children or future children or nieces and nephews, but for your parents too, who kind of set everything up for you. At least that was in my case. My mom came to the United States from Ukraine, a stamped refugee in her passport and in mine. So leaving some really scary situations, life was really tough for Jewish people in Russia. My mom's not Jewish, but she married a Jewish man. And ironically, we moved here and he stayed back there. So she just got kind of abandoned. And, you know, it's hard to be a woman on earth, and it's hard to be an abandoned woman on earth with a baby and no English in the United States. So she kind of had to start from scratch. Luckily, she had an education behind her, right? She got that from the Soviet Union, where it was all free. So there's some big perks coming from like a communist nation. Traditionally, like in the US, we're always like, no, we don't like that. But there were a lot of great things there. And when she came over here, she kind of like saw everything that that place didn't have. And she started like really working on her friendship circle and building a world where she can like trust people with her baby, so she could go learn English and learn computer programming, because she just picked up a newspaper. I was like, what makes the most money in the United States? Computer programming. All right, let's do this. And so that's literally what she did from scratch. Didn't know how to turn on a computer and had no English. And that's how she started. So her hustle encouraged my hustle, because I saw her kind of struggling for money up front. And then because we went through welfare and all that, food stamps, you name it, like waiting in those lines, it's kind of in the back of my head. It's very, very foggy. And I never felt like I experienced poverty or anything like that, because my mom never really let me know how bad it was. She would have like $20 left at the end of the month. And one time she remembers she spent the last $20 on a VHS, which was Lion King. And I got a lot of my first memories from Lion King. And to her, that was an investment, because she could leave me to watch it and work on her thing. So that $20 bought her a lot of hours. And that's kind of where she came from. Now she's good. She's got her own business. She's flipping a designer brand item. She moved away from computer programming, which she hated, but she did it for the money. And I learned about investing. She put me on people like Susie Orman back when I was 10 years old. I didn't really get it, but I knew the words. I was hearing the words like stock, invest, mutual fund, all these things. So I think that kind of prepared me for the world of investing when finally I was introduced to trading cards, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon. And there I had to trade with people older than me. And I had to realize, wait, hold on, there's this thing called value. Some cards go up, some cards go down. Okay. And then I learned there's this whole thing called stocks, and it's basically the same thing, but for older people. and that's kind of how I got in. I was like, I could flip Yu-Gi-Oh cards. I could do this with stocks too. So that's kind of my intro into the personal finance space through Yu-Gi-Oh, communist Russia. And now I'm over here doing my thing.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's a great story.
It's super unique, and I can appreciate it. And it's really cool that you're spreading this message. You're a young guy, man, right? Like we just talked, you're in your mid-20s. And I know for a fact, if we're having people reach out to us, ask us how to like help get their financial house in order, I know you're getting blasted with a ton of people, just with your social presence. So you talked a little bit about kind of what financial independence means to you, like the why behind it, how your mom kind of parlayed it into, you know, training you. And then you essentially learned it at a young age. What would you say to people that are currently right now, like learning about money and they're trying to get their personal financial house in order? Like, how can they set themselves up for success early on? Maybe they just got their first job or they've been working for their job for a couple of years and they're like, I'm saving my money in a savings account and I just don't know what to do. I hear this investing thing's awesome.
Right, right. I think it's like anything. You just have to go out and try it. Like, you could read a million books about basketball or baseball or football, and it's not going to make you a better player if you never actually go out and play, right? And not to like turn this whole stock investing thing into a game, because it's definitely not a game. It's a way of life, right? Like, this is a way to access the full power of your 9 to 5, right? Like, you're working all these hours, and I calculated backwards, like, whoa, I basically got paid double time because I invested almost every single dollar that I could invest. So I was getting paid twice what I thought I was getting paid just because I invested. So I want people to know that it actually is really glorious on the other side. And I've only been doing this for 5-6 years. So I'm just a tadpole getting started, right? There's people like Warren Buffett. And when you look at their numbers, like, at age 50, he had less than 1% of his current wealth, right? And today he's got like 120 bill plus. So for younger people, like, look at the older people, look at what they're doing. Like, there's a reason why Warren Buffett is so well-respected, one of the greatest stock investors of all time, still kicking and doing his thing, learning every day at age 91. It's amazing. So I look at the people who've been doing this for 70 years. I look at the Jack Bogles, I look at the Warren Buffetts, and I study the OGs. And then I see, what are they saying that's exactly the same? Okay, there's something there. Like, there's something there that's bigger than my gut instinct of investing in the latest tech stock or something like that. So I go with that ancient wisdom, but I maximize my time. When I was commuting from my home to UCLA, because I didn't want to rent out and waste money like that. So I was commuting, and my commute in LA traffic was 2 to 3 hours, sometimes even 4 hours every single day. So I just played podcasts, and I made sure it wasn't always about finance, but at least a couple of times a week it was. And that's where I really gained all this compound knowledge that built on top of each other. And after a year or two of driving with those finance podcasts, I felt like, whoa, I know way more than the average person. I didn't even realize how this happened. Amazing. I know more than my mom. I could help manage her finances, which is what I'm doing right now. So yep. That was kind of like the break it and make it point. So for everyone who has time wealth, if you're driving, like, capitalize, listen to, you know, that a new album, but the next day, make sure you don't and listen to something financial or whatever else you're into.
Georgie, that was really cool for you to break that down, because I think that there is a common theme that individuals that are not just elderly, but like seasoned investors, they talk about, like, you're not trying to pick the home run stock. You average it out over, you invest over a certain period of time consistently, and then you win in the end. I'm curious, how is it? What is the rule of thumb that maybe you would have or teach people or tell people that are, maybe they've already started, but like, how do they reach FI? What do you have, a definition of FI? Do you have something that you go by in order for you to kind of relay your message to what you think other people should do?
Yeah. So I think I'm a behavior analyst. I work with children on the autism spectrum. So I got to be really creative with the way that I set goals for them. That's what I do. I create like a systemic plan that people follow, their therapists that work one-on-one with them. And I realized that, hold on, I could use those principles in the world of investing and personal finance. I could create a systemic plan that I follow no matter what. And that changed investing for me. Before, I was like searching my feeling. Okay, Tesla just dropped from 300 to 183. I don't know, it might be low, it's less 40%. But now I have a system and I follow it no matter what. It's like almost like a religion. I have to go through the motions no matter what. Even if it feels wrong, I have to do it. And I won't be right all the time, but because it's systemic, I take away the personal out of it. So for people who are kind of getting started and they're pursuing financial independence, I would start by defining it. What does that mean for them? Because it's different for every single person. Same thing with the kids that I work with. Someone's goal might be to ask for a toy, but it's going to look different. Some kids are nonverbal. Some kids have trouble pronouncing certain words, right? Some kids are using one word or three words. Some need to make eye contact, some don't. So same thing with investing. Like, do you have an elderly parent to take care of? Do you want to take care of your parents? Do you have a romantic partner? Is anyone in your life disabled or, you know, have special unique needs? Do you have children? children, right? All that goes into your definition of what financial freedom or independence means. And I don't really like the word finance or the term financial independent, because I feel like we're all connected. Even the most libertarian, I hate the system. I got stocks and gold. That's all I need. Like, you're connected to people valuing gold, right? If people stop valuing gold, then who cares how much of a golden shiny rock you have? If you have stocks, you're relying on 9-to-5ers working and creating something and pushing these ideas into like reality. So I don't think no one is ever independent completely, because we're all connected to a system of people working together. But freedom, I think that comes separately from money. Like, my mom, she has a kind of a scarcity mindset where she lost everything so many times in her life, like language, culture, people, money. And to her, she's always a little bit short, no matter what. If she has a million, she'll want 1.5. If she has two, she'll want 2.5. And we're working on that. It's a psychological process. Yep. But for me, I feel like building a social network of people, like, even if stocks go to zero, I know I will have a couch to sleep on at a friend's house. To me, that's financial independence. Like, I will never be a homeless on the street, because I build a circle around me that I can trust, and I will take my friends in as well. So to me, that's truly financial freedom, where you're not worried about living on the street.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a totally different take. And I think a really good one too, because it, you know, you can get caught up in the day to day of trying to, like, you know, hit your daily goal or go to the next phase. And it's like, at the end of the day, if you do create those relationships that are around you and I guess trust in other people that they'll have your back, that really is like, I made a tweet the other day, that really is like what life's about, like human connection and community and build and just building that.
It's people, man. Yeah. It's what makes the world go around, especially like giving back. Like, it's, I really just, that whole last 30 seconds, what you just said was amazing, dude. And like, when we ask people their, hey, what's your financial independence number? Or like, how do you value financial independence? Everyone's always giving us a number. It's like, oh, $1.5 million. I need 60,000 per year, and I need to be able to draw off that 1.5. So how do I get there? And we'll preach, you need 10 properties that cash flow at $500, or you need to stack up $1.5 million and then you can do the 4% rule and you draw off of it. But yours is, it's truly connecting our message, right? Like, it's building that's, it's a network, it's a social network, right? But you meet these people in person too. And it truly is, it's just empowering to realize, like, hey, like, if you lose your job, if the stock market goes to shit, you still have these relationships, you still have these people, and you guys can build each other back up. So a really powerful message. It's important. I want to touch on, I've seen it going around your social a little bit too. And I believe if we did have to connect a number here, I think you mentioned your personal numbers of $1.25 million. Right. And there's like you almost have let's call it a roadmap, right? A plan to get there.
Yeah.
Could you just peel back pull back the curtain a little bit here for us, and just maybe someone that has a number in mind, you know, they have an idea what they think they should do to get there. Like, what are you currently doing? Like, how are you investing specifically? And like, give someone an idea of like maybe what someone else that's successful is doing.
Right. So I think framework hopping is really important. Like, sure, there's that progressive answer that I gave where it's like, we're all in it together, but you need to be able to detach from that for a moment and do think about the raw numbers and switch to more like conservative type plan. So it's important to be able to live in different ideologies and not become addicted to one, because people get trapped, right? If you're saving for 20 years and investing consistently, you're kind of going to be like, whoa, I don't want to start spending this. So that's why a lot of people who end up retiring early or retiring on time, they kind of, you know, they don't always do too well, like emotionally, because it's like, whoa, this huge journey is over. So I first make sure that I'm not too attached to the journey, even though I respect every step. I know that things could always change. I could have a child with special needs, and I'm going to give this up in a second, right? And take care of that. That's going to be my number one thing. Or my mom could get sick, or my girlfriend, it's over. I don't care about retiring within 10 years. So I always make sure that I'm dedicated, but I'm not attached. And that's kind of what balance is about. But for the 1.25 million, I make sure to calculate all my privileges. So my grandparents came 5 years after we did, and they started collecting Social Security, and they would change it to cash, and they would set it aside, right? And that was going to be my future college fund. We had to do it all on the table, sneaky like that. We come from a very different world, you know, which might be a lot more similar than we think. But anyways, so they would save money up for me. And by the time they passed away, my mom said, hey, you could go to any college you want. They saved up enough to take care of that. So I had that privilege. That is at least $60,000 worth right there. I ended up actually being rejected from every single school I applied to. So that's a whole other TED talk, but that was a blessing because that saved me $30,000. And I met people that I otherwise wouldn't have met. And I still got into all my mom's dream schools that she could brag to her friends about like 2 years later. So if I knew then what I know now, I would have not even applied. I would have saved the application process. There's no point, in my opinion, to go straight to like a UC or even an Ivy League, do the first 2 years at a community college. So that right there was my first step, saving $30,000 by not going to a UC. So I had that huge head start, a lot less debt that I would have had to take care of if my grandparents didn't leave me a pile of cash. And they were not wealthy people. I guess they were, but they did not work like really fancy jobs. Like they literally worked for toothpaste, like literally in Russia, like you would not get paid in money at a certain point. It was like, you get vouchers for toothpaste. Good luck, trade them, right? So that's where they came from. So they hoarded cash, right? They were like, we want this. In Russia, you did not hoard cash. You hoarded refrigerators and microwaves because cash changed value every single day, inflation. So the government could just say, hey, in 72 hours, it's worth two zeros less. And it is what it is. Take it or leave it. So people would collect technologies. So I feel like that's in my blood. And that's why I'm so into investing. And it's not about hoarding cash. Like by the time I hit six figures, my mom was like, yo, hold on, you got a lot in stocks. I'm like, yeah, how do you think I got to six figures? Because I got a lot in stocks. And she's like, you got more stocks than I do. I'm like, I know, and I'm going to keep it that way. If you're scared, I'm doing something right. So my whole plan is use my privilege. So again, grandparents left money. I did not pay for college. That already right there, a whole lot of money right there. I started working at a restaurant as soon as I graduated UCLA, and that sucked. I hated that part of my life, but I think it really drove me every single day, woke up with pure hatred, have to drive. I'm like, what do you mean? What if I had debt? Like, bro, like would I even want to live? Like I did everything right. And I think I chose correctly by pursuing life on earth. But anyways, right there, I was earning about $15 an hour. And I was saving everything, every single dollar. Cause my mom was like, hey, you're in dire straits. Don't pay for rent. Don't worry about it. We'll save every dollar. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to just save. I want this moving. So that's when I started buying stocks. And, on top of that, I got another job where I was a behavior analyst, and that would lead to my career. I was working with kids on the autism spectrum, making about $16.25 per hour. And again, every single dollar was going straight to stocks once I had my $1,000 emergency fund. After that, I got a third job doing kids' parties on the weekends for straight up cash. I was Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, you name it, Batman, taking pictures, doing everything, eating the cake, doing the pizza. And then I started hustling with that, and I was going off the grid. I was borrowing these costumes without kind of asking. I was supposed to give it back, but like, I was like, I need it for one more week. And I would get my own kids' parties, and they would be like, how much? And I'd be like, 90 per hour. And they were like, can I get you for 2 hours? I'd be like, yeah, you got it. Batman's coming for 2 hours, $180 right there. I had a party where I did 3 hours as a minion. And that was $270, which is, you know, more money than I didn't even need to get to college to do that side hustle. No one talks about dressing up as Minnie Mouse.
No. We should promote that.
Can I borrow that suit, dude? That's amazing, dude. You're a hustler. I don't want to cut off your story, but like, this is incredible. None of our guests have talked about the nitty gritty and just getting after it. Like specifically like this, like you're riding the bus, you're listening to the podcast, you're living at home with your parents, your mom to save a little bit of extra cash, but you have a job and you're not going home and watching Netflix. You're going and finding another side hustle and grinding it out. Well, you're young and you have time.
I think people overcomplicate it. I think like really retirement or financial independence is really just a math equation, right? At the end of the day. So it's like, if you have three jobs now, how sustainable is that long-term? You probably don't want to be doing that into your 30s and 40s. But like when you're young and you're moving, and if you have that type A personality, which I can tell you do, so do we, like you have this kind of fruition, like I'm going to go do this. I'm going to work three jobs. And then you say, I'm going to save every single dollar I can, whatever percentage that is. I don't know if you mentioned it, but like, let's say it's 50%. You can take that 50% and you put it away and you invest it. And over a certain period of time, that money ends up working for you and it grows. Oh, yeah. And the longer you can hold on to that working three jobs, maybe you're making $10 an hour, then you're making 15, then on another thing, you're making 30, then you're making 70. And it kind of builds. And if you can keep those expenses low, which it sounds like you did for an extended period of time, eventually, long enough in the market,
you're going to win.
Work out.
Like, you're going
to
win.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So yeah, there's no way to lose with that type of consistency. And I just wanted everyone to know, like, hey, before I was investing 80% of my 80K salary, I had to do all of this. I didn't even tell about my master's program, which I joined right there. And I sacrificed those Saturdays and Sundays instead of getting cash up front. I decided, hey, I'm going to lose those opportunities. I'm going to use my homework and I'm going to invest into the career, which is not going to benefit me for 2 years. And now, well, now it paid off because my income went from being an average of $33,000 a year from between 2015 and 2019 to now being in the 80Ks, which is a huge jump for someone that's frugal and investing with $33,000. And now I'm doing it with $80,000, $85,000, not to mention all the side hustles that, you know, that those habits stayed with me. So that's kind of why and how I'm investing like more than half of my income right now.
Georgie, I think that it's important to note that there's a lot of people that would hear the $33,000 a year number and say, I mean, I can't, you want me to live and invest? And by the way, you just said you're living in California. You're not living in like, right. Like the Midwest, right? So are you making these sacrifices by like probably like living at home and not, you're not living in a luxurious downtown apartment, but like those simple tasks of saying in the next 5 years, I'm going to just hunker down and I'm going to do this. Yeah. You're going to come out of it on the other side. You can invest. There it is, people. Proof. You can invest making $33,000 a year and invest a lot of your money. And then, boom, if you get to 80K, you can double your salary. And imagine if you use the same percentage of it, invest the same percentage, you're even that much further along.
Go ahead. I think part of it, I do want to recognize my luck because I know other people who do live at home with their moms, but their moms are not my mom. Their moms actually need to be taken care of, right? So it's very, very different. So there is that luck of the draw. And I feel like if I was given any other mom, my situation would be drastically different. Even though she's afraid of investing and she every day of the pandemic, she's like, no, you got to sell. You got to wait this out. You know, like at the end of the day, like without her, nothing would be possible. That 33K, I don't know. I don't know if I would learn to manage it. Right. I happen to be very frugal by nature. I don't like buying like a candy bar for even $2. I'm like $2 for a candy bar. I could go to Costco, you know, like that. That's just me naturally. Right. So I'm not like trying something here. And it just happened that I'm born in the right time, in the right place and moved to one of the greatest countries, I would say, on earth. And that in the greatest place in this country in a right time period where investing is the most accessible. So a lot of things like I do want to recognize was outside of my power, but I still recognize my own power during that process. Just because I was making like $16 at a restaurant does not mean I couldn't buy $1,000 of Weight Watcher stock when Oprah did. Right.
Right. I think it's important. There's a lot of things you hit on there, but there you count your blessings and it is, I guess a lot of people, I'll start here, is like you are kind of a product of your environment growing up. And like a lot of people, like some people have to realize like their parents just didn't know how to manage, use or generate money, right? Like, and it's a hard thing to break out of. And it's, you look at pages on social media, like both of ours sometimes, and it's like people, you'll find some haters come in and they'll be like, well, not everybody can invest, man. We don't have the money, blah, blah. And it's like, no, just like take a step back and like, go palms up here. Like we're trying to help out and show you the way. And it's like, it's not to come off as arrogant. It's like, no, like everyone's situation is different. We completely understand that. Like, how can we put you in the best position to start to invest, right? You have to get your house in order and you have to break these things in your head. Like the notions that you were taught growing up and taught in school, you were taught to be an employee, right? You weren't taught to be an investor. And I think that's just super important to bring up. Like a lot of people also, I'll say that were born and raised in the States and like they were born into privilege, right? Like they get a job and I'm not saying everyone, but like people become fat, dumb and lazy, man. They sit down, they got a job, say they have a job for it, that they finally made 80K or like they expected to make 80K out of school. They're like, cool, man, I'm just going to go lease that new car. I'm going to go sit down, watch Netflix when I get home and chill with my girl and like just go to work every day. And then they wake up.
There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. But if you want wealth, you won't acquire.
It's just, you're going to do what pretty much 80, 90% of society does. Right. And like, that's just what you're trained to do. It's very hard to break free from that, but I will say hearing stories like yours are motivating. And I don't want to say people that have come from nothing, cause you didn't come from nothing. There's a lot of value and a lot of things that were taught, but like you have this chip on your shoulder, man. And it's like people like you just have this other edge about them and they keep going, they're go-getters and they're like, you're not going to stop. And I don't know. It's hard to put a, like, hard to label that and like put all the words into like the right sentence and to describe you, or people like you. But it, the coolest part to me is like, I always find these people that are just grinding so hard and they like, there's not enough time in the day, but you still give back to other people. And that's what's mind blowing to me. It's like the guy that's doing nothing sitting on the couch has no time. Nope. I got no time. Sorry, man. I'm like, I'm off work, but you're here grinding like 80 hour weeks. Plus you're like, yeah, absolutely. I'll hop on the podcast. Absolutely. Hey, you guys want to do a live? I'm like, dude, do you sleep at all? Like, are you, how many coffees have you had? You're speed talking about everything. It's just, I can just tell, like, it's just the, it's your inner motor, man. And it's super motivating. It's just like, you're giving us energy at the end of a long day. So I appreciate it. I just want to touch on that.
Oh, much love there. I actually don't drink coffee. Never tasted it. There's certain things that I haven't tried in life yet. No alcohol, no coffee, no cigarettes, no weed or anything like that. Like never touched it. I don't even say bad words, to be honest. I don't know why or how, like just my mom told me this is the rule. And I was like 6 years old. I was like, we actually signed a contract until I'm 37 years old. I'm not allowed to say bad words. I'm not allowed to drink alcohol. I'm not allowed to smoke cigarettes. And we put money on it. I bet $1,000 for each one. And if I'm wrong, for each one, there's going to be $5,000 that I have to pay her. So she's only going to pay me $1,000 for each one. And I thought at that moment, I got you, mom. I got, now she's nervous. Now she's nervous because like more than, what is it?
Pretty close.
15 years passed since that day, even more than 15 years passed since that, like 20 years passed. And now she's like, oh my gosh, you haven't broken any one of these. Oh, I'm going to give you 3,000. And you know what? I would pay you gladly those $3,000 because like, you know, like what mom can get away, like, with their kids never doing any of that with just like a simple contract.
Until they're 37. Are you kidding me? That's it's incredible. And honestly, it just, you're sure I can now understand why you're sharp in between the ears. Like you're maybe between the eyes, whatever that phrase is, but
yeah, well, we drink too much alcohol. Yeah. We would not really.
We're not,
we couldn't think of it.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. But, so let's talk about, we talked about the kind of like inception of investing. You saved up a bunch of money and you're like, all right, I need to put my money to work. People are like, great. Hear the story. Appreciate you guys. But what the hell do I invest in and how do I do it? So what I want to start with is, can you talk about the specific accounts that you have? And when I mean accounts, I'm talking 401k potentially, Roth IRA potentially, brokerage. Like what do you have? And then can we talk about specific stocks, index funds? Like maybe, I know you're not a financial analyst here and you're not paid to do this, but like just maybe a recommendation for someone starting out where they should look.
Yeah. So none of this is financial advice. This is just my own history, what I've been doing with my life, how I pick my own stocks, because I do pick a lot of individual stocks. I would say about 60% of my brokerage account is individual companies and not funds or anything like that, which I think is unique for someone pursuing financial independence. Most people kind of take the safer route with index funds. So first things first, I prioritize my brokerage accounts, which is my taxable account. And the reason I do this is because if you're filing single, you can withdraw up to $40,000. And if I could live off 33, and you know, my mom did help me a whole lot, but if I could live off 33, I could live off of 40. And it's okay if I take a little bit more than that, I'll pay my taxes. But if I'm married, right, I could take away up to 80,000 from my brokerage account. So I'm like, whoa, that's like a Roth IRA without being a Roth IRA. That's amazing. And speaking of Roth IRAs, I have my Roth IRA and I didn't even know it existed. I didn't know this was a thing for my first 3.5 years investing. So as soon as I found out, I was like, wait, hold up. There's a Roth IRA. Instead of feeling bad, I was like, okay, yes, I found out. I'm glad I found out now there's a Roth IRA. So I maxed it out 2 years in a row, which was very, very tough to do. I depleted my emergency fund all the way down till I had like about 2 months of safety. And I was like, okay, let's go. Because remember, I was mostly lower income during my investing journey, right? Never hit six figures. I think this is the first year, and that's not through my 9-to-5. That's through Instagram and monetization and all that. But the moral of the story is, like, once I maxed out my Roth IRA, I decided to have different investing strategies across my accounts. And the reason, originally why I made my Roth IRA was also I didn't have a 401k offered at work. So I was like, okay, how do I do this? How do I get like a fund just for retirement? Is there anything that exists? And I was like, yo, you don't have to be given it through your work. You could create your own. You could have a Roth IRA. So in my Roth IRA, I'm very aggressive. Most people think retirement, you're going to be older in life. So let's make this very conservative. I'm like, whoa, hold on. Let's reverse that because I got like 30 years plus. Let's make this as aggressive as positive as possible. Even if the first 15 years go wrong, I still have another 15 years to get all conservative about it. If I could buy crypto in there, I'll buy crypto in there. Like, let's go all in on whatever. I have like, I think 20% of my Roth IRA is pure Nike, just Nike stock. I don't have a single pair of Nike shoes, by the way. But I do have
a bunch of Nike stuff. Wait, that's the best part.
let's talk about this. I did see this. You don't own a pair of Nikes. You've never tried coffee. And there's one other thing that it's like very popular, but you invest in it, right? What is it? You made this graphic. I saw it the other day. It was brilliant.
What is Starbucks coffee. I never had Starbucks, but I got Starbucks stocks. I don't pay for Netflix. My girlfriend pays for Netflix. So shout out to her. I do watch Netflix. I got some shows to catch up on. So no shame there. Well, I don't really know.
Either way, maybe it was just the top two. It was Nike and Starbucks. And it's like the things that pretty much everyone has tried or they've done. And you're like, I don't have these, but I got stock in them. I actually own a piece of their company.
Right.
Which is insane. I just thought it was cool. And it's a different take on it, man. And that's how I learned that you didn't drink coffee. And I'm like, how is he going so fast? His brain is going, working overtime.
It's exciting. Yeah. I feel like coffee makes you feel not tired instead of giving you energy. So like you don't sense how exhausted you actually are, and you don't register.
Hold on. I need to wait.
Right.
And it doesn't give you a focus. Like I've noticed that like there's a difference between just being awake and alert than like locked in and focused and in that flow mode, you know, when you're just cranking.
I love coffee because I like the taste of it. And then it also like the caffeine, I limit it how much I drink too, because I know that I would be addicted to it if I drank it all the time.
Yeah.
Drink it like a couple times a week, but I love it.
Yeah. If we're going out on the weekends to grab drinks, you're like, I'm not having coffee.
I don't mix coffee and alcohol. I don't drink those in the same time. Like at the same time, they're just like a bad
imbalance.
I know my body's balanced. Yeah, totally. But not to talk too much about coffee, but
so sale stocks, but back to that. So you have the Nike and the Roth IRA, right?
Right.
But the reason I wanted to touch on that Roth IRA, I just love it because it's a super tax advantage account. Mm-hmm. People that don't have one, even if you have a 401k, I recommend getting one of these too. It's just like, there's a reason there's a $6,000 limit on this thing. Like there is something, if you're limited on it, it's clearly there's a lot of benefits and we could dive into all those. And what I'll say is like for someone to get, you talked on picking individual stocks and like, I typically I've read a couple books and I'll throw them out there again. I think I've talked about them a couple times, but there's one called The Simple Path to Wealth by J.L. Collins. And he talks about index funds and it's for probably the conservative that doesn't want to put the time in, right? To be able to pick, they're not like the investor that are going to look up single stocks. They'll pick a basket of funds and maybe just pick the VT Sachs for Vanguard, right? It's the total U.S. stock market, right? And they just invest in that. And it's like, if the whole U.S. stock market goes to shit, then you're in trouble. If not, if you're betting on the U.S. stock market, which is one of the best in the world, that's one of the, I guess, most successful companies in the world are in within that, you're in a good spot. And so that's just for the beginner. But I do want to talk about, I know we're talking about your 1.25 million. You have the Roth, bunch of Nike in there. Then you have the brokerage.
How often too? Like that's one of the questions.
Yeah.
Picking the stocks, the specific ones, you mentioned them. And then how often are you investing? How do you know when to do it? Since it's a little bit of a different strategy than what we have typically heard.
Right. Yeah. So my mom always thought I had psychic powers, but I definitely don't have psychic powers. So that's not it. But I think creating those behavioral systems that I mentioned earlier, being systemic about it and diversifying your strategies. For example, I do have a 401k now offered at my work and I don't go past the match. And one reason I don't do that is because I want to diversify tax-wise. Who knows what could happen in the future with Republicans or Democrats in the United States. The laws might change about how 401ks work. I know there was a lot of talk about Roth IRAs, but I think the average person is going to be the safest with their Roth IRA. I think that is the last thing that would ever get touched, because whoever touches that is never going to get reelected. Their whole party is never going to get reelected. That's why I think going into the Roth IRA is diversifying also against future tax laws. With the brokerage right now, sure, you could take out 40K tax-free, but in 10 years, is that going to be a thing? Will it be 37? Will it be 30? You don't know. You don't know for sure. With the Roth IRA, odds are it'll be tax-free in 50 years, in 100 years, in 150 years, right? Assuming the system is still the way that it is, or a majority of it is. So that's why I go into the Roth IRA. I kind of don't like going into the Roth IRA because I want to retire earlier, and Roth, you can withdraw that money for the most part at age 59 and a half, at least the profits, right? The original contribution you could take out, that makes everyone feel good, makes them feel safer. A lot of my friends are like, whoa, if I knew you could withdraw the 6,000 at any time, as long as it's still there, then I would have done this a long time ago. So yeah, and you have a baby, you could take money out. If you're sick, medical expenses, going through a divorce, there's all sorts of like exceptions. So Roth IRA, if you have a huge emergency, that's still your money. You could take it out. 401k, you don't know what will happen in the future. I diversify. I have a Roth 401k, and every single match is going into the traditional 401k. So I'm kind of diversifying, not just stock-wise, but and sector-wise, but tax-wise and account-wise. When it comes to my Roth IRA, I will never have, at least I don't think I will, a single fund in there. I build, it's going to look like a fund after 30 years of investing, and I force myself to buy something new every single time. For example, this year I purchased two Dividend Aristocrats, which was Coca-Cola and forgot the other one. Yeah, so I don't even remember which one it was. All I know is I'm picking these Dividend Aristocrats that have been paying out dividends for 25 years plus. Coke is a dividend king or queen. It's been doing it for 60 years or something like that, right? And then the other one, I was like, you know what? I'm going to gamble on Bumble. I'm just going to take a gamble. It goes to zero, goes to zero. Match.com is their only competition. Bumble is the only alternative. I do happen to have Match.com as well in my brokerage. So I like kind of the Rockefeller method, like buy your competition. So that way, if one of them beats the other, you still have both. And that's always usually better than having cash. I also like this other method. I love U.S. history. And one part of U.S. history that intrigued me was the gold rush in California. And the people who profited most were not the miners. Of course, sure, the early people who came in profited a lot, but it was the people who sold jeans and pickaxes, the tools that you need to mine. So I always like looking for stocks like that. Now, I don't own this stock, but I think Roku was a classic case of a pickaxe stock, right? Because it gives you access to all the streaming services, right? Hulu, Apple. So you're investing in Disney. You're getting a piece of Disney heat. You're getting a piece of Amazon streaming heat. You're getting a piece of Netflix heat. So with Roku, it was the pickaxe stock. And we know Roku performed very, very well in the last couple of years. And I think thinking in that sociological way really, really helps me. That's one of my big backgrounds. And before I ramble on too long, in my brokerage account, that's where I focus a little bit more on index funds. And because there's a lot of tax tricks, I don't want to call them tricks. They're not even tricks. It's not magic. It's just the rules. There's a lot of tax rules that you could use. So if an index fund goes down, well, you can actually sell it for a loss and then buy another fund that maybe tracks a few more companies. And technically you could write it off and that's it. You take the loss, you have basically the same positions, and you can't do that in a 401k or Roth IRA, but a brokerage, I think, is the best place to be a little bit more conservative since you have tax loss harvesting as a tool and a strategy that you can use.
Love that. Two quick things. One, I know you touched on, you said if you are filing single, you can withdraw 40,000. And then if you're jointly, it's 80,000. Can you explain that just on an elementary level? Let's just say you have $100,000 in your brokerage mixed between a bunch of different stocks. Are you telling me that you can withdraw $40,000 and not have to pay any capital gains tax?
Only. That is true, but that has to be your total income. So your total income cannot pass that 40K. So if you're on your FIRE journey and you retired early and you quit your jobs, you quit your side hustles and you have $0 coming in, well, now you could sell, if you have your 1.25 million, you could sell 40,000, which is actually less than 4%. And you could just take that 40K and that's it. At least today. That could always change in the future. And that's why I always diversify tax-wise, not just sector-wise, not just stock-wise.
I think this is really cool, Georgie. We interviewed Robert Leonard. I don't know if you've come across him on Instagram. Yeah. And he mentioned to us, similar to what you were talking about with like the sectors, where I forget what sector he called it, but it was like Square, Visa, MasterCard, and like the kind of the payment processing, like, I guess, folder.
Sphere of the investing world.
Stocks. Yeah. So he was saying that like they're all competition to each other, but like buying the stocks where you're not necessarily buying one specific company, but you're buying a sector. And he thought that that was really smart, especially with everything going digitally. And that's similar to what you're talking about where you're buying the competition. I think that's cool to note if you are going to, in fact, pick individual stocks.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a great strategy. And a lot of times competition is forced to collaborate. You have the great collaboration between AMD and Intel, where they're both kind of like battling against one another. But a lot of times companies don't want to rely on one chip provider, right? They don't want just to rely solely on Intel. If something goes wrong, they need a backup. So everyone knows they're going to be buying from both of those. So there's these strange little unicorn moments where they have to make sure the other company's doing well too. And they kind of rooting for each other in these kind of like really interesting friendly moments in capitalism.
Yeah, it is very interesting. I want to touch on, we've been going 100 miles an hour on like stocks investing, and like there's probably some people here that are a little wet behind the ears and just don't, they're rookies, if you will, on the subject. Can you shed some light on a few resources and like where you've gained your knowledge on this? I know it's probably very hard because you've been doing it for a long time, like multiple years, but like a few resources, whether it's like specific channels on YouTube, potential like outside of our own, because I want to touch on yours in a few minutes, because I know it's amazing, we look at it all the time, but like whether it's channels, blogs or websites, just like things where, or even books at this point, is like where people can gain some knowledge and like kind of a structure so they can feel prepared to go in and start investing pending take the action and actually read them.
I think it's okay to watch the same video many times from different creators. So that's something that I actually really, really, really love doing. I go to the cookie cutters. I go to like Andrei Jik, who's also a Russian investor, and he did really well educating people on YouTube. He's also very into Pokemon, which I am. He just invested actually $200,000 into a Pokemon collection, which my friend was the guy who sold it to him. So I got like the inside scoop, and it was really, really cool to hear about. But I like listening to people who tailor their information for 50-year-olds when they're investing. Trying to remember his name real quick, it'll come up a little bit later, but who is it, Graham Stephan's a great resource. Like he's a YouTube persona. He really like mastered that kind of like craft of delivery, but when you go there you kind of expect cheese, but you always walk out with like, oh my gosh, I didn't get cheese, I got a whole pizza and it's ready to go, and it comes in different flavors. There's vegan, there's like sausage, whatever you want, like he's got it. So like I watch, like even if he and six other creators create the same video on Roth IRAs, I watch every single one to learn the way that they deliver and to really study how they reach their audience, because some people they want someone with gray hair and a suit explaining about stocks. Some people want someone who's like goofy and wearing like a bow tie. There's a dude like that on YouTube too. So I literally watch every single video that I could come across, whether it's like a gender perspective, whether it's someone who's starting out a new channel with 2,000 subscribers, or someone who has 200,000 or 2 million. So that's how I do it. YouTube is your resource. YouTube has everything. But if you have specific questions, two things. You could go on Reddit. Reddit is I don't want to even say gold mine. It's a Bitcoin mine. It's a Bitcoin mine out there. And you could get so much information on Reddit. Just type in your question. That's it. Instagram, you would be surprised. Message people who have 10K followers, 20K, 30K, 50K, 100K. They will respond eventually. Well, I know I will, and I know all my friends will. So you are going to get your answer. I would do that all the time. Financial advisor of Kansas City. I think that's his URL. I would send him so many questions, and he would, within 24 hours, here's your answer. Here's what I think about that. Like, wow, a whole entire financial advisor. I don't have to pay any fees or anything. And I'm just messaging him straight up, and he's answering. And I'm like, yo, this is as good as it gets. Internet is really cool. Why don't people use the internet like this? So those are my tips.
It's never been easier to create wealth in America. We are living in a time that, now that doesn't mean that everyone has the same playing field. I fully well admit that I have a leg up over a lot of people, and probably a leg down over some people too. But it's never been easier or more accessible for you to gather information and create communities that you don't actually have to meet in person, just like you said. So I think that it's interesting. People are looking for a resource. It's like, oh, is there one book or is there one like tool? And it's like, kind of, no, it's all the collaboration of like you finding people that look like you or sound like you or feel like you, and that they're doing it too. And that's why we interview people like you and all the cool guests that we have on, is because like somebody listening out there is going to gather one tick of information that's like, oh, he or she is similar to me in that type of way. And like, that is, I'm going to take their advice. So I think that was good advice.
That's a great point. That's amazing advice. And it is pretty simple in a way, but like I think about going home, and I hate to keep bringing up Netflix because we all watch Netflix, but I'm saying you have time. There is, if it's important enough to you, you'll make time for it, whether it's getting up a little bit earlier or when you're supposed to be on Netflix. Just open up your laptop or open up your tablet or your phone at this point, toss in the headphones and watch YouTube, type in your question. That's it. Some of the DMs we get, and I know you get them, like they're the most basic question, and I'll definitely answer you, but I'm like, wow, this person actually came to us for advice rather than going and just quickly YouTubing it. Maybe they didn't know what channel to go to. And like, right. I think it's important to at least give a couple of resources. Graham Stefan or Stefan, however you say his last name. Graham Stefan, he's phenomenal, dude. Like I looked up, it was when I was first getting introduced to index funds. And I was like, hey, top index funds to invest in, right? He has an amazing video on it. And he actually not only explained what they were, told me how he allocates his portfolio and like the return he got and put a little graph. I'm like, it was his incredible content, by the way, but the visual. Yeah. And I'm like, I took to that guy. And I'm like, I like the way you think. And so I'll keep watching his videos. And we both, right. you know, obviously took to him. So it's a great example, but it's truly as simple as go instead of Googling these days, YouTube.
And that's why we put out the content that's both visual and auditory so that just people can gather different information and process it the way they will. One thing real quick, before we get into your social, I think that's where we're going to go next is, let's just say do you have a recommendation for people in terms of percentage of allocation towards investing? Like, I think that's one of the biggest questions we have. How much of my money left over at the end of the month should I invest? And like, I'm starting to think, to me, it's like, once you have an emergency fund, like invest all of it. But I don't know if people think that way. I'm curious what your perspective is.
That's a great one. That's a great one. And the person I was thinking of earlier was Rob Berger. He has a lot of content that's kind of tailored towards people in their 50s. And I watch everything he puts out because one day, hopefully, you know, willing, we're all healthy and alive, like we'll all be 50 and 60 and 70 and 110. But I like watching his videos because he answers questions just like that for people who are in a more vulnerable position where it's like, they don't have any more income coming in. And I kind of watch that and I'm like, yo, hold on. If he's telling these people, like, you could be taking these risks because I am, and I'm in my 50s, then if you're in your 20s, oh my gosh, if you're not investing like 90% in, like, you know, you really got to see where your priorities lie, because that's where the real power is. He had a really interesting video, and I always love hyping up other people because we're all here as a community trying to create something. And there's so many knowledge pockets that don't get tapped into, but Rob Berger, like compared, if you had a huge rainy day fund, like if you had a year's worth of cash sitting there, once you already reach retirement and you have like everything else in stocks, is that good? Is a year too much? And the answer was, objectively, yes. Does not matter almost how vulnerable you are, what your situation is, a year is too much. And he empirically went down through it, looked at all the research, and he said, here's the best combination. And again, like, this is his opinion and based on the research he did. But once you're at the end of the line, and I'm saying this because a lot of people listening are probably not at the end of the line. And by end of the line, I mean, you're just starting your retirement life, right? You might be 40 and doing that. I'm not saying you're about to die or anything like that. He had a really interesting concept where you would have a 6-month emergency fund, and that's your limit, right? Then it goes to a 5-month, because instead of selling your stocks, you would be spending your emergency fund for your life. Then it would go to 4 months. Then it would go to 3 months. Then you would sell 3 months worth of stocks and you would replenish it. They said, this is one of the best strategies to actually feel safe. And according to the data, not give away returns, like having like a 5-year emergency fund. Some people in their 60s have, because they're like, I'm in my 60s, I don't have income. No, trust the market that got you to this place in the first place. So for someone that is in their 20s, and again, it all matters. You need to analyze your privilege. Are you paying rent? Is anyone in your family sick? Is there a chance of getting sick, right? Do you have multiple streams of income? Because if you do, well, the more risks you can take. And I think the biggest risk that a person could take is simply the cliche, not investing at all, waiting until they have all this knowledge. Earlier we mentioned Warren Buffett is 91, and what's he doing? Learning every day. Do you ever think that you at age 22 or 35 is going to feel more comfortable than Warren Buffett, who is still learning every single day? It's never over. You will never be 100% there with your knowledge base. So I would say, invest literally as much as you can. That would be the correct answer. Save some for your emergency fund. You got $1,000, good. And you cover 1 month. Okay, cool. If you don't have kids, I would stop there. If you got kids, let's go to 2 or 3 months. If you got a partner, well, let's scale it back to 2 months. If they have income, let's scale it back to 1 month.
That's awesome. Cool. I think just having that tangible advice is really huge for people, because we went from talking philosophically to like actual, the nitty gritty. And I think people resonate with that. And look, it's working for you. Why would it not work for other people? I love the answer.
Oh yeah. And just a couple other ones we've heard, like people, it's interesting your take on this, but some people say max out your 401k, max out your Roth IRA, and then start a brokerage from there, right? Or if you want to dabble in an HSA, like there's so many different.
Right, I do it backwards. Yeah.
There you go. There's so many different variations that you can do it. So it's like whatever works for you, you got to do your research. But I think there really is something to automating everything. That's just one thing I want to touch on is like, once you build everything out, automate your investment. So you don't even think about it per month. Like obviously you're going to think about what you're going to invest in. Right. Mm-hmm. But like when you find the funds that you want to work in, just set it for a certain amount of time. Like I know specifically for me, let's just talk about maxing out the Roth IRA. Like I know each month I have $500 automatically invested into the Roth IRA because like, dude, that money's gone. Now I have 6% matching in my 9-5 for my 401k. I hit that match exactly to your point, just to hedge my bet a little bit. I'm not putting over because I want some cash to pump into real estate, to pump into some e-commerce, to pump into our business, our brand, right? Like, so there's, everyone has a different strategy, but automate it. So I know that money is not even, it doesn't even exist to me anymore. And then you open your account up a couple months later or every single day, like I do. And like, you just see that thing climb and climb and climb. You're going to have dips and investing isn't for the faint of heart, right? Like you're going to, if you can't see
definitely not real estate investing.
Yeah. But like seeing your account go down someday sucks, but just if you can, the most motivating thing to us or what I like to do is just like find additional streams of income. Like how can you give yourself more money to essentially give yourself more options and have more fun? And this, now it's a game to me. Like once you start investing, man, it's impossible to go back.
So fun.
Yeah. You can't the world so differently. You look at McDonald's when you're crossing the street and you're like, hold on. Let me check their stock price real quick. Okay. What was it 5 years ago? Yeah. It changes your perspective. 100%. Stores are no longer stores. They're ticker symbols.
You're so right. So, with that, I kind of want to like segue into your social media before we wind down the show. And just one thing I talked about, I know we talked about it a little bit off air, but you talked specifically, you kept hinting at Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon. And I think you and I potentially will do a live on this one day. I'm going to hopefully suck in for that. But, my boys and I have just, it's very nerdy. It's fine. We loved Pokemon cards growing up, dude. And just like open the pack slowly. And like when you unsheath that freaking Charizard, Blastoise, whatever it is, you just get jacked up. And I'm 30-year-old talking about this, but we love it. And I know if my boys are listening, they'd be jacked about it. And you would never expect like judge a book by its cover. Like certain people have, dude, I have so many cards. I have like pretty much every iteration of the Charizard you could possibly have. Okay. And I saw you drop a lot of cash on as a Chinese Charizard. I think is first edition, right? Can you walk me through that really quick? Yeah, and then I'll talk social.
Right. So earlier, I think a question I accidentally dodged was how is your portfolio set up, like percentage wise? So like Pokemon cards is about, I would say anywhere from 12 to 18% of my entire net worth. It is all Pokemon cards. Yeah. And most of it is in one card. So one card. Let's have it. So that card is the Charizard. It is, it's not English. It's a Japanese. It is from the 1996 print, which is when the first Pokemon trading card came out. And in 2014, it was officially recognized that there was a earlier print still in 1996 of the base set, the original pack of Pokemon cards. Professional collectors, like not everyone knows that this is actually a thing. There's so many niches in Pokemon, and the whole thing, it all comes down to, does that Japanese Charizard have a star at the bottom right-hand corner? Because if it has a star, then okay, it's a normal Charizard. If it's perfect condition, you might get like 10 grand for it. But if it's missing that star and it is a 10 out of 10 condition, one just sold for $490,000, right? Just a while ago. Now, I don't have that one. So let's calm down a little bit.
you saw my eyes, dude. I was like, the hair
stood up.
Okay.
Right. There's only five in the whole entire world that are graded 10 out of 10. So I have a 9 out of 10, which there's about 35 of those in the whole entire world, maybe a little bit less. And it's very, very precious because it is not just the legendary Charizard card, not just from the very first pack, but it is now known since 2014 that this is officially the very first print of Pokemon cards that ever existed. You could find a random Pokemon, like if you name like Onyx, right? The dog, the rock snake, right? It's a common card. Like people wipe their butt with that Onyx. If you find
they literally do wipe their butt. That
card is like, it's trash, right? But if you have a one without the rarity symbol, without the circle at the bottom, because circle signifies common, Charizard has a star, so it's rare. If it's missing that rarity symbol and it's 10 out of 10, you could sell that common card for $2,000 on eBay.
Wow, man. There's like a hidden world on here. I don't want to dive too deep in this because, dude, we're going to save this. We are going to rock out with this stuff. It's it's awesome. But are you comfortable sharing what you spent on the card and what you think it might potentially be worth right now?
So I purchased that card. It was on eBay. My girlfriend and I were looking at it and we were like, yo, look, you're eyeing it. You got an emergency fund. I had about $27,000 in my emergency fund at that time, which covered, I'm very frugal. I would need like at worst case scenario, maybe $1,500 a month. So I was within the safety range and I was like, look. Okay. I'm gonna put a bid on it and I'm gonna bid half of what I think it's worth. Because the last one sold for $45,000. And the one before that sold for $45,000. So we had two sales for $45K. I know earlier in the year, or November of 2020, I believe, two copies sold for $60,000. So we're in the middle of a correction. It went from 60K all the way down to 45. And here I am bidding on one of these Charizards. And I put a bid of $24,000 and like $24 and $1, something like that. And we walk away. I come back to the computer and it says you won. And I'm like, I won? Are you serious? I won. And at first I was really, really happy. And then I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to tell my mom?
Okay. I just spent 25 G's on a card.
Yeah, it was, it actually didn't hit the max. My limit was 24. It sold for 23 point, for point nothing. It sold for 23. And then I was like, okay, my limit was 24. I'm good. And then, oh my gosh, the taxes hit me. And it says you owe $2,000 in taxes. Like, no, I went over. Oh no. My plan was 24. No matter what, what am I going to do? And then, what I found out, I finessed the system. I was like, wait, I got family in Florida. There's no sales tax in Florida. So I gave them a $100 tip. And I was like, hey, can you please ship this to me? And it went to Florida. I paid zero in taxes. And then it came to me. They got their $100. They were very happy. Okay. What'd you order? Oh, it was a Pokemon card. I told them straight up. It was a $23,000 Pokemon card. Let's hope it comes in good condition. What a story. The FedEx truck said it arrived. They never came. Then we checked the cameras. So my mom was like, no, we drive into FedEx right now. So we drove all the way to FedEx and they were closed, of course. And we were like, oh my gosh, what are we? It came the next day and we were like, oh my gosh, there it is. I have a IG Live opening it up. It's in a beautiful condition, pristine mint condition, 9 out of 10 Charizard from the No Rarity series. A lot of serious investors actually have a lot of money in Pokemon cards. And this is one of those asset classes that I think is very underrated because people who know nothing about cryptocurrency are buying cryptocurrency. Why? Because it goes up. Well, guess what Pokemon cards do? Guess what sport cards do? 100 years of history. So that's kind of the story of that Charizard, the last one that sold after mine for about $45,000 each again. So it was like kind of a very interesting that I got it for 50% off. Very, very interesting. And one just sold for about $28,000. So it seems like it went back down. But with these things, like you got to be ready. Like it'll go up and down $10,000 from every 2 weeks because there's only 35. So sales don't come in every single day, right? So right. There's huge gaps in sales.
Dude, thank you for shedding some light on that. It's awesome, man. I think it's very cool. We sometimes our shows are cookie cutter on real estate. And I just think now we're talking stocks or investing like different asset classes. It's amazing. There's a lot of people that are going to take this and love it. I mean, the kid's coming out at me, dude. I've been smiling cheek to cheek freaking 10 minutes. It's awesome, dude. So, and I saw, talking about your social, your reels are hilarious. I love your raps. And like, I only had known about the card by watching your social. So I want to talk about that. You're super creative when it comes to finances and like putting a little comic relief on it for people. Right. And I don't want to say dumbing it down in any way, but just making it fun because it is a stressful topic for a lot of people. Right. So, I want to talk about, let's just start at the very basics, like financialism, like that's your handle for everything across Instagram, right. YouTube, et cetera. Like, what does that mean? Is it a play on words?
Yeah. So at first I was like, okay. I had two ideas. It was going to be the middle class mogul or financialism. And I was like, okay, I don't know, middle class mogul or financialism. And like the vibe was very dark for middle class mogul. I was like, okay, I know who's going to follow this type of page. Everyone who would have already followed a finance page would follow middle class mogul, tagging the middle class, right? Okay. No, that's not what I want. I want something that's going to reach people who otherwise would not be reached. That's the main goal of my whole agenda here. Get as many people investing who otherwise would not be investing, right? Whether they're turned off by money, it's stressful. And I was like, okay, what do people like? What's the one thing people like? And I was like, people like fun. And I was like, financialism. It's like financialism, but it's like financialism. I was like, okay, let's go. Problem. No one's going to search for financialism just like that. They're going to look for, okay, investing. And your page is like investing for beginners. Okay. Everyone's going to follow that. But once I got through that hurdle of like the first 1,000 people, it was a snowball effect. Like then 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, we hit like 20,000 just a little while ago. And I think it's just the beginning. Financialism, fun and finance, where you can go, you could hate money, but I promise you, you're going to like the content. Even if like you're not into investing, you don't like, you're going to watch it and be like, oh my gosh, I need to show this to my mom. And it's then maybe you'll start investing. Yeah. That's the absolutely whole point.
I can agree more. And it actually played to exactly how I described your page, dude. And like your whole mantra. I love it, dude. You got ball of energy in it. And it's just like I don't know how to completely describe it, but like giving back to you can just feel the joy in your being and your energy, dude. And like, it's awesome. And it's not addicting, whatever the word is, like people take to it though, whatever that word is, just like
gravitate
towards it. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So it's awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. But I wanted to know, like outside of the fun in there, like what do you offer people? I know you have some, I believe, do you have any courses? Do you have any ebooks, like things that people can go and learn from you?
Right. Yeah. So I just monetized my Instagram for the first time in January of 2020. And first month was wild. I had no idea how to run a business or anything like that. And I was like, you know what? Like, I think people are going to pay for a course if I put all my posts together into one place and filter out all the like, the sprinkles. And I was like, here it is. This is raw. You get what you get. And I'm going to do a little raps in there and make people laugh while they watch it. So I made a course and it's everything I wish that I had back in 2015 when I started investing, and I was too frugal to ever consider buying a course. And I'm like, man, me from the future would have went back to the past, be like, hey, you gotta get a couple hundred dollars and you gotta buy this course right now because things are gonna be different. And I calculated, like, if I knew everything I knew today back then when I started, instead of sitting at around a net worth of 300K, it would be closer to 500K, if not a little bit past it. And that's without investing into gnarly things like Pokemon cards or having psychic powers or anything like that. Just following the behavioral principles with every single fund and stock that I purchased. If I knew the strategies now, things would be way better. And I would be like, whoa, $200, $300, depending on the promotion going on, like that's totally worth having an extra six figures, like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, like, sure, let's go. So that's what I did. I called it Stock Market 101, the laziest path to wealth, because unlike real estate, no offense to you, real estate people, everyone listening in, like real estate is a lot of work. It's a lot of work. There's a lot of variables to manage. But with stocks, I feel like, hey, I woke up, roll out of bed. I didn't brush my teeth, push some buttons on a keyboard, push enter. There you go. That's it. That it does not get lazier than that. I didn't break a sweat. I didn't make any phone calls. I didn't worry. That's it. Just buttons on a keyboard. I'm like, if you can push buttons on a keyboard for like texting a friend, you could do it for building wealth for the future. And that's kind of what my stock market 101 is really about. How can you do the least amount of work to get the most amount of returns and enjoy your life to the fullest quality? So yeah.
I love it. Totally. Man. That's the lazy way to become a millionaire, they say, right? Like, I will take a look at your course. I love looking at our community's ebooks they put together, the course they put together, because it helps us learn too, right? But yours seem, dude, if you're going to be rapping to me during this thing, I'm watching the shit out of it. Like, it's going to be funny. It's going to be awesome. So I can't wait to do that. Very cool. We have taken up so much of your time. We truly appreciate it. We're winding down to the show. I promise, only a little while left. It's been fun. So I'm sorry that I've been pulling so much of your time away, but we're down to the core four, which is the second to last segment of our show. And with this, we ask four questions just to get to know you a little bit better, see how you tick, and then hopefully provide a few last resources to our audience.
Yeah.
So with that, we'll keep it super easy, and we'll segue a little bit away from virtual. I know we talked to YouTube as a huge like platform for you and you do your research, but this question is, what's your favorite investing or business book that has like highly impacted you and you'd recommend to others?
Yeah. So I'm going to break the rule right there. I can't follow the rules. So I would say every single book that I started reading, I'm like, yo, I should have just typed in on YouTube the title of this book and found it right there, the audio version for free. Saved the $10 right there and put X2 speed. So while I'm driving in my car, it's just playing it. I did that actually with some of Jack Bogle's books. He has a book called Enough. I think the introduction to that book is a lot what I was talking about, what freedom really means when it comes to finances. He was critiquing the greed of capitalism. By the way, Jack Bogle is a huge capitalist. So like,
The founder of Vanguard.
Yeah, he's the founder of Vanguard right there. So he was critiquing the greed of capitalism, Ponzi capitalism, 2008 capitalism that crushed so many dreams in just one year. And he had a story of how one of the greatest writers in the world, I forgot who it was, I think the dude who wrote The Great Gatsby, shows how much culture I have, wrote The Great Gatsby, and he was meeting with a Wall Street goon. And the Wall Street goon was like, hey, yo, isn't it amazing? I made more money in this month than you did with the greatest book that arguably was ever written. And the guy responded, who wrote The Great Gatsby or whatever it was, he said, hey, but I have something you never will. And he's like, oh yeah, what's that? He's like, I have enough. And I was like, oh, goosebumps, mic drop.
Damn.
Right, enough, right? So that's what this whole journey is about for me. I think there's so many free resources, again, on YouTube. If you're not a reader, right? If you're a reader, just buy the book, Enough. You could buy it. And Jack Bogle, legend. I listen to all of his interviews. I feel like he's one of my spiritual mentors that I've never met, along with Warren Buffett. By the way, Warren Buffett said, if anyone gets a statue for being a great investor, it wouldn't be him, it would be Jack. So shout out to Jack, what a legend. Shout out to Vanguard.
That's amazing. Awesome. I love Vanguard.
That's a good, I've never heard of that book, and it's definitely one that I'll be picking up. So the second question for Core 4 is, what is the biggest mistake you've made in your investing career or journey, and how have you learned from it?
Yeah. So I used to think I made mistakes because I sold stocks too early and I didn't know, but I think, you know what, if I had to say, my ultimate mistake was not investing probably money upfront for a mentor who's already had the 6-5 years of experience, because that would be the difference. I was like, look, I just danced as a minion for 3 hours. There's no way I'm giving this $270 for your course. There's no way. But having to grind through the research for 5-6 years, learn from personal experience, like I don't have to learn off my mistakes. I can learn from other people's mistakes. And not creating a system of behavior. I had no idea investing was all about behavior. I thought it was about reading charts and understanding things, but no, it's about knowing yourself. It's about facing your own fears when the market crashes and you lost 5 years of progress right there in a week. Like, what are you going to do now? And to me, I just wish that I actually was not so frugal back then. And I did invest just a little, and I'm not complaining. Like if I could go back and do it all again, I would do it all again. But if I changed one thing that would have helped me, it was probably find a mentor. But how do you find a mentor? Who's a good mentor? That's a whole ball game. Who can you trust? Like, who's just selling snake oil? You never know. So you kind of got to bet, and hopefully people bet on me or you guys. So yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, man.
Very insightful, man. I really like that answer. Third question is, this was a fun one. If you had an additional $50,000 of discretionary income, how would you invest it, or what would you spend it on, and why?
Ooh, income. So it's coming in every year?
It's one lump sum
50K. Okay. First thing I would do, and I would look at the Pokemon cards and Yu-Gi-Oh cards. First thing. Why? Because there are so many opportunities in that super small market. When you compare it to stocks, it is super small. You could literally buy out every single card of a certain type if you know where to look, right? $5,000-$10,000 investments could just literally have you have 50% of the cards that exist for this particular card, especially Japanese trophy cards. That's a whole other ballgame, TED Talk. So I would go into those very fringe markets, knowing that, hey, I just found $50,000 on the floor. I think I am obligated to share, assuming I'm paying no taxes on this. I will definitely take out at least 10%, maybe 20%, and give it to people in my life. Probably my girlfriend. I would hook her up with a new car, not like a brand new car or anything like that. I would lease out something if possible, but leasing right now is so difficult. Or buy a used car that's very, very reliable. Something nice. So I would definitely break all my rules once again and just go out and buy someone I love something that would benefit their life immediately and not 20 years from now. And the rest, if anything's left, I would buy conservative investments, you know, just go from there. Cool. Index funds.
A great explanation of an allocation too, because I think you know, you get caught up in the FIRE movement and you think, like, you know, it is really, really good to enjoy the fruits of your labor at certain points. And I think so buying a car would be It's
good giving back. It's great. Yeah. No one's answered it like that before. Like they're like, oh yeah, I know exactly what I do. I invest it, blah, blah, blah. I put it into real estate. But it's like, you're just creative. And I really like that.
Yeah. It's hard to be on like a financially savvy podcast, but I buy a brand new car. Like, wait, this guy is selling his course.
We got to edit that out.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. Okay. So fourth question of the core four. A little bit philosophical here, but what do you want your legacy to be? What gets you out of bed every morning? Why are you doing all this?
Yeah, I feel like, and I don't want to cut myself short, but like if this was it, if my time has come, like I feel like I did everything in my power to do everything in my power. So I feel very, very accomplished. Like whenever I walk from point A to point B, I'm like, whoa, this is awesome. I feel like I unlocked my power. But one thing that I challenged myself to do is, I gotta make it some way, somehow as a rapper. And that is a very, very difficult journey. And part of it is I picked it because, you know, this is something that, that I don't have any talent in. I can't freestyle. I can't make stuff up off top. I can't memorize lyrics. I am negatively skilled in this. I didn't know what rhythm was. I didn't know what a beat was. I didn't know music had a tempo. I didn't know what 1, 2, 3, 4. I had no idea how people knew how to bob their heads all at the same time at a show. It's like, how are you guys doing this? I would just be shaking my body all over. And I would literally sit in my room and rap over Lil Wayne beats 67 times. Like literally I had 67 takes, no lie. My girlfriend was like, well, why'd you do that? This is obsessive. And I was like, no, it's not on beat. And she's like, yeah, it's still off beat after 67 tries. So it never came naturally to me. And I was like, look, if I could accomplish something, if I could make a song, right? If I could make a song that maybe one day on a podcast, I'll talk about it, maybe. And they'll say, yo, you know what? This isn't that cheesy. When I'm listening to Lazy Boy or To the Moon, I'm actually bobbing my head and enjoying it. Then I win. That's it.
Dude, you already won. I started the show with that.
Yeah.
You already won, dude.
Well, hold on a second. You're listening to, I don't know how you're listening to Lil Wayne, but you don't curse, because that's like,
yeah, that's a fact.
That's like, yeah. Well, Lil Wayne is like, he's a legend, but it's
yeah, he's a legend, punchline legend. I go to him all the time to like mix words. But if you listen to Lazy Boy, if you listen to the Moon, there's no cursing and there's a heck of punchlines, right? Like what I say, work smart, not hard. Yeah, you better wisen up. All my stocks are rebels with the way they're rising up, right? Stocks, rebels, they're rising up, right? Double meaning, double on.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's fine. That's good stuff. Here, wait a sec. Let's just for the people listening, like, let's just get the beat going here. I was gonna play this early on.
I'm gonna take some PTO today. That's good.
Shit fire, dude.
He's really good.
Dude, I was repping this hard on the way to the interview today, bro. Well, I'm telling you, it's fire. It is absolute
That's
fire.
That's amazing.
You are amazing, dude.
Early.
Dude, if that didn't get you going, I don't know what would.
I got to drive home a little bit, dude. I am going to be full blast ripping down the highway. Listen to that. Hey. It's super motivating. You're very creative, dude. I like, you're giving back to people. Great guy. But also I just love the way you tick, the way you think. And it's, you provided an incredible episode for us. We have one last segment of the show.
Last drop.
It's called Last Drop. And with this, it is knowing what you know now. If you could go back to, I know you're young Cat, but like maybe 18, 19, younger Georgie, what advice would you give him, just knowing what you know now, if you could go have a quick conversation?
Yeah. So I ask myself this all the time, and I would, if it was a different time in my life, I would tell myself like all the secrets of the world and all that, everything that I know, like invest early and often. But I think I would just watch. I would just sit and I would just look from the distance and I would just see like my life play out. I often play this same like mental game with my grandparents. Like if I could go back when they were like 5 years old, I would watch everything. I would not interfere. I would just sit back, grab my popcorn and watch like time pass as they do their thing. I think part of having great power is knowing when to not use it. Right. So that's what I do. I just look.
That's great. That's a very different answer. And I think there's something about that that speaks volumes, because I don't know that people are always like, well, do you want to know the future? And for me, not even close. I don't want to know. I don't like if you could predict it, or like if you were looking back, I don't want to know what's ahead. You know what I mean? For me, I just don't. I think it would ruin what I'm about to you know, do. So I think it's
I love conversations like this, yeah, dude, like talking about the world and just like how you, you know, just basically your answer here is we could go on forever about this. All three of us could probably talk for hours just about life.
Yeah,
but I'm for sure. Just in general, like observing and like being in the moment, that's, it's far different than someone else might say is like, oh, I want to do the next thing and keep chasing. Right. They, we talked about it in previous episodes, or there's just like, there's always the carrot syndrome, right? Where you're always chasing that carrot above your head. And you're like, you're on the hamster wheel, not even in your 9 to 5, but just like in life, like you always want that next level. And then when you reach that next level, you're like, holy shit, I'm there. And I didn't even realize, I didn't celebrate. Like I'm a different person at this point. So like a lot of people, you know, when you interview old people or like just when people are at the end of their lifetime, they always say, hey, just like, I wish I was in the moment more and like more present. And I think that takes knowing that at such a young age, it's really cool to hear that message. And when you're doing that, it means to me that you do reminisce and you do like think about stages of your life and celebrate wins. And it's important. So cool topic. Love the answer. Corey, you got one?
No, I think it was an amazing episode. I want to thank you so much for coming on, Georgie. It was really, really cool to get to know you. I think we'll be able to point people back to this episode for a long time. A lot of really tangible information as well as just like somebody really interesting that came on. So thanks so much. If people want to get to know you, you kind of mentioned it a little bit. What's the best way for people to reach out or get in touch with you and learn from you?
Yeah. By the way, it was super nice to meet you guys. I think this is the start of a great, great, great friendship. I know we DM'd a couple times back and forth, but that's where the party starts, right? People want to reach me, they can DM me. Literally on Instagram, I'm there every single day. I don't skip a day unless I'm like away in the woods or something like that. Like I'm literally there, challenge myself, make a post every single day, no matter what. And if I'm online making a post, I'm probably going to read your message. I don't like having like DMs filled. So like I literally go through everything and I get through everyone. Sometimes I send a voice memo. So like, feel free. Like it's a fun place, right? That's why it's financialism. Like literally ask me, hey, what stocks should I buy? I will answer. I will tell you, hey, that's the wrong question. But you know what? You just started the first step. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. So people listening, juicers, if you enjoyed this episode, please go follow our friend Georgie at Financialism. You can find him all over social. We've already plugged his brand, but it's an amazing place and you don't have to feel scared to invest. He breaks it down on multiple levels and he packs the punch and puts some fun into it. So incredible episode.
Great to meet you.
It was a pleasure, man. Thanks so much.
Hey.